Hello and welcome to this 100th episode of this little podcast we call Two Chairs Talking. My name is Perry Middlemiss and I'm here as always with my good friend David Grigg. Hello and Happy New Year, David.
Thank you, Perry. 100 episodes, my goodness, we never thought we'd get here, did we? Never.
I didn't think we'd get to 10.
I didn't think we'd get to the end of the first year, but here we are with nearly 5 years up our sleeve.
Nearly 5 years. Oh God, it seems like a heck of a long time, doesn't it?
It does. It is a long time.
So well, it is a long time. It is a long time in anybody's language, I think. But it's been a pretty good run.
It's been entertaining and enjoyable, I think.
Yeah, so, I think it has.
I hope other people have enjoyed it too.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the listener may have... Our one and only listener might have decided to sort of shuffle off and is probably wondering what the heck's happened to us over Christmas. Probably thought that we were overindulging just a bit too much. But
well, there might have been a bit of that, yes.
A bit. I think it was more the eating rather than the drinking. I had a few days where I, shall we say, gave it a bit of a nudge, but not...
not too much.
That's not good. Disgustingly badly. So it was more a matter of... I get to these stages... This time of my life where I go, oh, yeah, that's enough. I think I'll go to bed now.
Fair enough.
So you don't sit up thinking, oh, yes, just another couple more drinks. That'll be good. No. Not doing that anymore. Mm. Too hard. So, not much else is happening in my book. We're having a few days off at the end of January down the beach, just to have a bit of a wander around. On the Bellarine Peninsula, it should be good. It's something my wife likes to do every year, go off for a couple of days and get out of town, go down the beach, and just potter around, go and have a look at a few wineries, a few restaurants, walk up and down beaches.
Sounds very pleasant.
Just have a look at... We just try and look at a different part of the state each year, not going to the same place all the time. Better that... I know some people like going back to the same place all the time, but I like a bit of variety, and going to somewhere different each year is a good thing to do. So
it is. Looking
forward to that. That's over the Australia Day long weekend coming up. Whether we want to call it that or not, that's what its name is, and so that's the one that everybody knows it as. I mean, it's not a day that I consider to be... with commemorating, to be perfectly frank, it's of absolutely minor consequence when you consider that it wasn't even the first day that the first fleet landed in Australia, and it's really to me it's a commemoration of the founding of a small colony in Botany Bay, and I think Australia's a bit bigger than that. But anyway, that's my view, and I think that we need to move the date. What it's going to be, I don't know. But then. You know, well, this is just like argument that you have with a lot of people and they get really anti you. You know, you're saying, oh, I really think we should move the date. Well, when do you want to move it to and why? And you know, you feel like saying, I don't have to have all of everything worked out before I decide that I want to change something. It's like if you decide you want to go and buy a new car and you could say to somebody, well, unless you can give me the absolute nut of specs right down to the size of the tyres, you're not allowed to even think about it and discuss it. I mean, that's just ridiculous. You have to be able to say, well, at a higher level, we'll do this, and then at a lower level, we'll fill in the detail later, you know. But I know that people all want the detail. And, of course, that's the classic political way of killing conversations, asking for the detail and then...
That seems familiar. Yeah, a certain person kept asking for the detail.
Stuck into things over one particular little piece of the detail when it's sort of a minor thing.
And I think, it's a way of delaying and deferring and, I think we won't get into that.
Edward de Bono used to refer to that as black hatting. A lot of that at work too, as well. But anyway, but let's not talk about that. Let's talk about better things, shall we, David?
Let's talk about books.
Let's talk about books. A much better thing to be talking about. I find, unless the missus decides that she hates a book so much she hurls it across the room, and I happen to be in the way, which doesn't happen very often. I don't find that they injure me very much. So
good.
which is a good thing. I must admit, I haven't ever had a bookshelf fall on top of me. Not something that I ever want to basically have happen. But the only thing it does is occasionally used to hurt the bank balance a bit, but things are a little easier now. You know, when you've got more time to get down to the library to pick things up, and you can wait if you have to put something on reserve. And I would hardly recommend people make use of their libraries. I think they're a wonderful resource.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I'd try and get to mine these days about once a week, once a fortnight, and have a bit of wander around. My only difficulty is I've got such a huge to-be-read list in the house as it is. So what do? I go to the library. Oh, that looks good. Oh, that looks interesting. Oh, that looks interesting. And I come back with things and I think, well, am I going to get through these in the next 3 weeks?
Well, let me tell you my New Year's resolution. I don't usually have a New Year's resolution, but my New Year's resolution this year is to actually get through and read a number of books which are already on my bookshelves. I already own them, but have been sitting there for years.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So one of the ones I picked up was an omnibus volume of Graham Greene, which has been on my shelves for 43 years, which has not been read.
Pretty
so that's
good.
Probably the big, that's the longest, I think. But so I've started on that. I've read some of that.
Okay.
I'm reading some other things. That's my resolution, to read what I haven't, that I own, but haven't read for a long time.
If it's an omnibus edition, you can just read one and then go off and read another
one. Well, that's what I'm doing.
And then come back and read it. Read one read a Graham Greene novel about every four or five novels. So that'd be all right. That'll last you for a good couple of weeks, David, the way you're going with your books.
Yes, I think. Yeah.
Anyway, so how was your reading in 2023 as an overall? What's your overall impression of it?
Well, my overall impression, I read less, a smaller number of books this last year than the previous year. I only read 62 books, whereas the previous year I read 85. There are reasons for that, but I still read some very good books, and so we'll talk about those when the time comes. But 62 was not as many as I'd hoped, but I was doing too many other things, like playing computer games and things, which I shouldn't do. That takes up a lot of time.
It does indeed. It does. So was it quality over quantity last year, do you think? Or shall we find out?
We'll find out. We'll get there.
I started out like a house on fire last year. Read 13 books in January and 13 in February, and then seemed to fall off a cliff.
Yeah.
And I got through to 90, which I thought was pretty good, up on the previous year, but still down on my target of 100. We have been talking about this over the years, David, about me setting targets that I never reach, but I don't really have a problem with that. I mean, I know these targets are aspirational, and it gives me something to aim for, and it keeps me focused at least a bit. But I've got to be willing to be able to say to myself, look, don't cut yourself up too much if you don't make it, but just keep pushing towards it. So keep trying to ensure that you're reading widely across a number of genres, different formats, different styles, different everything, and just try to get a wider diet.
Yeah, well, it's good to have a target. As Robert Browning said, a man's reach should exceed his grasp, or what's the heaven for?
Nice line. Yes, I think that's probably good. If you don't reach for as far as you can possibly go, if you don't aim for the stars, you're going to hit the gutter, isn't that right?
That's right, yeah. That was Oscar Wilde, I think. Yeah.
So the idea is that just keep aiming high. Keep aiming for a high number, and keep track of what it is you're reading. Well, I do. I like keeping
track.
Yeah,
me too. I do that.
Because, again, it's one of those things that, for me, it gives me a sense of achievement. That, oh, look, okay, yes, I was supposed to read 9 books this month, and I read 9 books this month, that's good. Or maybe I read 12, but if I only read 5, what was going on? Maybe I better find something that, go back to comfort reading and try and find a comfort book that gets me off and going again. So
sure.
Occasionally during a year I've got to do that. I hit a wall for various things for various reasons. You know, there's always something going on in your life, you're travelling, you're doing something else, there's lots of the family requests that you have to fulfil, or just things that are happening outside a time when you can just sit down and casually read a book. Mm. But those times are precious, and I really love them, and I'm glad we have this as a hobby, David, I really do. Anyway.
So what total did you get to?
I got to 90.
90.
Which was up on, I think it was about 84 the year before that. About 100 the year before that. So my 2022 was down, but it's starting to pick back up again. So hopefully I can continue that this year and head towards that that 100 mark. And that's it. That's the target. So there we go. So we've done a bit of discussing about what it is we're going to talk about, which I'm sure the listener is very glad, so that we don't go off on a complete and utter ramble for, you know, 4 hours and getting absolutely nowhere. We have got our, as we usually do, we have got our categories all broken down. We know what we're going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
I've got them ranked from me, David, and I'm going to be going from number 5 down to number 1 in each category.
Okay, well, I can do the same. That'd
if you would like to do that, that might be better. I think it just, you know...
It's just like the Oscars, isn't it? You're sort of working it towards the best picture, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Well, exciting. If you get to a particular category, you know, best Western, and you give the number 1 of the best Westerns,
it's downhill from there, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's
downhill. Right.
So we should work up. That's good. Good idea.
Who cares what number 5 is? We've already taught them what number 1 is. But if you start at number 5, then they're looking forward to number 1. That's my view, and I'm sticking to it.
All right, we'll go with it. Okay.
So let's go with that approach.
Okay. So who's starting?
Well, you are.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah, it's always you, David.
All right, okay.
Age before beauty.
All right, so look, we're going by genre.
So best SF, best
science fiction.
Talk to me about
this. All right, number 5 on my list then for best science fiction I read during the year was Slaughterhouse-5 by Kurt Vonnegut Jr.
Oh, okay.
We reread that for our Hugo Time Machine episode.
Yep.
And I still think it stands up very well after all these years. That was sort of an anti-war novel as much as a science fiction novel. But I always like the way that it starts. Not the actual start at the very start of the book, but the kind of where the actual story starts is that line, Billy Pilgrim has come unstuck in time. That's a great line. It's one of the great lines in science fiction, I think. All right, so that's that one. Number 4 on my list was The Mountain in the Sea by Ray Naylor, which I think we both liked a lot.
We did.
It was very good. The whole idea of where intelligence may lie and where it may not, and how we get in contact with an alien species without traveling too very far. So that was good. Number 3 on my list was Children of Time by Adrian Tchaikovsky.
Mm-hmm.
It's the start of his series called The Children of Time. I thought that was a cracker. I really, really enjoyed that.
Not recommended for arachnophobes.
Not for arachnophobes, because there's an entire spider civilization.
That's very interesting.
Comes to the fore. But I thought he dealt with that very cleverly that it's very clever world building. You know, the technology that the spiders develop, which is all based on webs and networks, and the fact that they're able to control ant colonies, which kind of turn into computers. Which is kind of mix. There's a lot of cleverness in it.
It was a neat idea.
Yeah, yeah. The thing which I thought was very interesting about it was that you've got these two parallel stories. One is the last humans from Earth who are desperately trying to find some way to settle down, and you've got the spiders on this planet which is where the humans want to settle down. And so towards the end, of course, there's this conflict, which, you know, there's going to be a battle between the two. And I thought it was a real testament to Tchaikovsky's skill that by that stage you're actually rooting for the spiders, not for the humans. That's why I thought anyway. All right, that was number 3. Number 2, another classic from our Hugo Time Machine episode, The Left Hand of Darkness by Ursula K. Le Guin. Not much need to say much more about that. It is a classic of the genre. And number 1 on my list, my top science fiction read of the year was Embassy Town by China Mieville. And I just think that's a terrific piece of SF. It's you know, very clever dealing. Again, you talk about world building and alien building and the very strange language that the aliens have on this particular planet. It was all done so very well. I thought it was a cracker. It was, I actually think it's better than his The City and the City, which is saying a good deal, because that was a damn good book.
It was a damn good book. And China Meoffel's been in the news just recently.
Yes, there's a new novel coming out. Well, I'm not sure if it's a novel, a graphic novel, a novel anyway, which he's doing in collaboration with Keanu Reeves, who has apparently been writing graphic novels for about the last 4 or 5 years to great success. I did not know that.
No, I did not know that either. So that's an interesting turn-up, because Meoffel hasn't written any fiction for...
No, ages.
Quite some time.
In fact, Embassy Town might have been his last.
Really?
Published, which is 10 years ago.
I haven't. There was
a novella came out after that called about this census taker, I think, which I haven't actually read.
I've had a look through my back list of things that I've noted that I've read, and it looks like I've read Embassy Town, but for the life of me, I can't remember it. I'm going to have to get back and have a bit of a look at it, because I know that you've mentioned it a lot, and I really should go back and have a look.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so very interesting that a couple of the books that you have on your list are on mine as well, David, which is a good thing. My number five is The Migration by Helen Marshall, dystopian novel, which and I'm going to mention the years that are in, because this is I think just a little bit of something, a note I want to make about this. That was from 2019. And then Every Version of You by Grace Chan from 2022, a novel set in Melbourne, and I must have stated on the podcast where we were discussing this a while back that there weren't all that many SF novels set in Melbourne, forgetting, of course, George Turner's The Sea in Summer, and Neville Shute's...
On the Beach.
On the Beach, and there's bound to be a few others. Oh, yeah, Courier's Bicycle, I think it's Courier's Bicycle.
The Last Woman on Earth.
There has been a few. I was just... every now and again, mine goes completely blank. But anyway, I really enjoyed Every Version of You. Number three was Slaughterhouse-Five, which we have discussed.
Okay.
That was from 1969.
Yeah.
That is that's the oldest one of the whole lot. I didn't read Left Out of Darkness this year because I had read it the year before. Otherwise, it would have been probably top of my list. My top two, number two, The Mountain in the Sea by Ray Naylor from 2022. And my top book from last year was Sea of Tranquility by Emily St. John Mandel from 2022, which you probably read the year before.
I did.
So that got a very high. I gave that 4.6 out of 5, which is fairly high for me, especially for a SF novel. But oddly enough, I only read 11 SF novels out of 67 novels all year. Mm. So when people say, well, you read 90 books... Well, there are such a things as novellas, and there are collections and anthologies and all the rest of that sort of stuff. And they all add up. And when you put them all together, get up to around about 90. But I thought, I had thought that with only 11 novels being read in the year, SF novels being read in the year, that I was down. But it was exactly the same as the year before. I didn't read... any of the books on the Hugo or Nebula list this year. Didn't really particularly appeal. And unfortunately, both of mine, Sea of Tranquility and The Mountain in the Sea, both of which were eligible, and both of which I nominated for the Hugo Awards, didn't make the ballot.
Yeah, that's right.
I was annoyed, David.
Yeah, I was annoyed too.
I'm annoyed. Mr. Annoyed of Hawthorne is not very happy with the Hugo ballot this year. But anyway...
Yeah. Yeah. Before we leave science fiction, do you have any honourable mentions? Because I've got one.
No, I don't have any honourables.
Because I should have mentioned Red Team Blues by Cory Doctorow.
Oh, okay.
Which was a techno thriller, I suppose, but I thought it was pretty good.
I
read 13 SF books during the year.
So I had four novels from 2019 to 2022 on the list, and the only older one was Slaughterhouse-Five from 1969.
Okay, yeah. There you go.
Mm. All right, maybe I'm being a little bit harsh on some of the older novels these days. I know some people said, "Oh, that was a bit rough," but you play them as they lie, is what I say. But there we go. Best fantasy, David, and fantasy. Yes. Now,
I was going to say, I'm looking at my list now, I'm thinking I actually cheated a bit because one of the books on my fantasy list probably you would call science fiction. So we'll see.
We'll see.
So I only read four books which could be considered fantasy, and one of those is perhaps not fantasy at all. Number four on my list, I don't even have a five. Number four on my list was Conjure Your Wife by Fritz Leiber, which I think still stands up pretty well after all these years. The idea of witchcraft being something that all women know about and used to their advantage of their spouses or partners. Number three on my list is Among Others by Jo Walton, which I had some issues with, but nevertheless, it's not a bad, coming-of-age sort of fantasy novel. Mostly the coming-of-age story is the strong part of it rather than the fantasy, which I almost felt was a bit tacked on. Anyway, so that's number three. Number two is the one which I'm a bit doubtful now and probably you'd call science fiction, which was Civilizations by Laurent Binet, translated from the French. And that's an alternate history. This is the one where the Aztecs, conquer Europe. I liked it. There was a few... It ended in a strange sort of way. But I quite liked it. It was good. It was cleverly done and fairly convincing, really, if you followed the premise of what makes the change, the split in history. And it's quite clever. The whole guns, germs and steel thing in reverse. Very clever.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, very clever. And the top of my list, without any doubt, was House of Odysseus by Claire North. And this is the second in her trilogy, which is called Songs of Penelope. And this continues the story from the first book called Ithaca. And each of these is told from the first person point of view of a Greek goddess. So the first book is told from the point of view of Hera, Zeus's wife. The second book is told by Aphrodite. I wasn't quite sure that worked, to be perfectly honest, but it does allow her to tell from the first person point of view the whole story of the judgment of Paris, where this young bloke from Troy is asked to decide which of the three goddesses is the most beautiful. And they all promise him various things if he'll vote for them. But of course, Aphrodite promises Paris the most beautiful woman in the world, who turns out to be Helen, the wife of Menelaus, who becomes Helen of Troy when Paris abducts her and takes her off to Troy. So, but anyway, really good stuff. Clever feminist telling, retelling of these stories. Although I've talked about the goddesses, the main character really is Penelope herself and her struggles to keep control of her little island of Ithaca and deal with people like Menelaus, who turns up partway through this particular novel, and with his wife Helen in tow, who's now been brought back to Greece. And she is an interesting character.
Yeah, okay.
It's good stuff. I enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to the third book in the series, which Odysseus finally returns. Mm. That'll be interesting.
All right.
So there you go. So how about you with fantasy?
I've already read five novels this year, way down on what I should have, and I've only got a top three. I've got a note saying that I did read 11 fantasy books this year, but only five of them were novels. Mm-hmm. The rest of them were either a collection or novellas, and I've separated my novellas out into a separate category. But I've read five fantasy novels this year, so I've only got a top three. My third one, Treacle Walker by Alan Garner. Mm-hmm. Garner coming back to good form after all this time, and with a book that was shortlisted for this year's Booker Prize.
Yeah.
The story seems to be doing the rounds is that SF novelist M. John Harrison, who was on the committee for the Booker Prize, praised this one to the skies, and it got pushed into people's hands, and they must have liked it.
Mm.
Odd that, isn't it, David? When somebody gives you something, say, you really should read this, and you read it, and you go, actually, this isn't so bad. Mm. Okay, it was pretty bloody good, I thought.
I still have it on my list to read, but we'll get there.
You should do. It's shortish, but it's, you don't want it any longer because it's just perfect length, perfect size, It's just wonderful. Second on my list, The Grey King by Susan Cooper. The fourth in the Dark is Rising series. And I will be reading number 5 this year and finishing that. And while I'm not looking forward to finishing the series, I'm looking forward to reading that last book, if you know what I mean. I've been quite enjoying that over the last 3 or 4 years, reading one book a year.
There's a nice box set of that out, and I've been looking at that thinking, oh, I might go on my wish list. Yeah, looks good. The whole series, yeah.
Yeah, I've got box sets of things, and then I think, what am I going to do? Oh, no. So, no, I'm off that. I'm off box sets.
Okay.
Right. That. And my top fantasy novel for this year, which was, I have seen some people listed as a novella and some people listed as a novel. I've pushed it into the novel category because it was nominated for a novel. It's Spear by Nicola Griffith, which is a retelling of the Percival legend out of the King Arthur canon. Excellent stuff. I really, really enjoyed that immensely. That was from 2022. Treacle Walker from 2021. And Grey King from 1975.
Yeah, yeah.
So again, I'm reading stuff that's really quite recent. But the interesting thing is that I have a note that I really should go back and reread Garner's earlier stuff.
Things like The Owl Service,
Redshift is the one that that was the one that I recall. I read that and I thought, what the actual hell is going on here? Could not figure that one out at all. So maybe with a bit more age, I can go back and say, oh, I don't care what it was about. Still pretty good.
I don't recall having problems with it, but yeah, there you go.
I'm a simpleton at heart, David. You know that. So but I am looking forward to reading more of Alan Garner, and I really should check out more of Nicola Griffiths, and I'll finish off Susan Cooper Cooper's series as well.
Excellent.
All right, so that's fantasy and science fiction done. Yeah. So crime.
Well, I read 13 crime novels during the year, I've got some honourable mentions, which I'll come to later. Let's start with number 5 on my top 5, which was Fire with Fire by Candice Fox, where I'm very fond of her, this Australian writer of crime. She's written some terrific novels. Fire with Fire wouldn't be her best, I would say, but she's now setting a lot of her novels in the United States. I think it's just because she gets a better audience, sells many more books that way. But anyway, that was quite a good novel in that it features a couple who have been driven to desperation by what they think is the lack of investigation of the disappearance of their daughter some years ago. And they actually take the police forensic laboratory hostage on all the samples that are there to prosecute various cases. And so they're holding things up in there and threaten to destroy samples as they go, unless there's more done. All right. And number 4 on my list is All That's Left Unsaid by Tracy Lien, which is set in the Vietnamese community in Cabramatta, from the point of view of a young woman whose brother, Denny, has been murdered, been bashed to death, in fact, in a crowded restaurant. But nobody saw anything. They were all looking the other way, or they were in the toilets, or nobody knows a thing about it. And so she's really struggling to work out why nobody wants to talk and try and get things moving so she has some closure after her brother's death. My number 3 on the list is In the Morning I'll Be Gone by Adrian McKinty, one of his Sean Duffy novels. Cleverly done, I thought, integrating it with historical events of the time, which is the 1970s, I think. Just off the top of my head.
70s into 80s.
I can't remember exactly when this one is set. But it's Margaret Thatcher is the Prime Minister in England, and there's a little subplot to do with her, which is good. No, I like that a lot. I must go on to read the others in that series. Number 2 on my list was a Mick Herron novel, but not a Slough House novel. It's Down Cemetery Road, which is his first novel. And I liked that a lot. It features couple of powerful, well, a couple of interesting female characters. There's a house blows up, and this woman who lives just down the street wants to know, and there's a child. The house blows up, and the parents or the mother is killed in this house. But there's a child who survives the explosion. And there's this particular woman, Sarah Trafford, who wants to track down what's happened to that child. She's disappeared from the newspapers. There's no further mention about what's happened to the child. Has she been taken to live with relatives? Whatever, you know. But she can't get any information, so she digs deeper and deeper and deeper, and in doing so, gets herself deeper and deeper and deeper into trouble. It's good. It's good stuff. It's well worth reading. Certainly a good debut novel for McCarran. And my number one is a book which was the second last book I read during the year, which is Once They Were Wolves by Charlotte McConachy. And that was terrific. Fusion of a psychological drama, mystery, environmental story. It's basically this woman is trying to, as part of a team who are reintroducing wolves to Scotland as a rewilding exercise. And the locals don't like it, obviously, because they think that the wolves are going to kill the cattle or they're going to kill the kids or whatever. And so there's a struggle there. And then there's someone is found dead, possibly being savaged by a wolf. And so, you know, this big dilemma that she's in. So I'll do a proper review some other time. But that was definitely my best crime novel of the year.
Okay.
Even though it was the second last book I read.
Any honourable mentions?
I've got Unforgiven by Sarah Barry. I won't go into any detail about that, but I thought that was pretty good. Everyone Here Is Lying by Shari Lapina, which is about a 9-year-old girl goes missing in an American suburb and everyone in the street is telling a different story about it. The other one on my list, honorable mention list, is Exiles by Jane Harper. Probably should have been a bit higher in the list, but not into my top five. There you go.
Okay. All right. Now, as you know, David, I do a lot of rating of my books to give them a sort of a figure out of five, which is what helps me when I go back into it at the end of the year to have a bit of a look, and I can just sort them on ratings, and some things pop up at the end of the year, and you think, maybe that should have been higher, that should have been lower. Well, I didn't know I gave four books exactly the same rating as I did in this particular crime category. But anyway, there we go. Well, I read 22 crime novels this year, so probably the highest number of any category that I read. I've been doing a little bit of trying to catch up on older classic crime novels that I had never read. You may find this hard to believe, David, but I actually made it to the age of 68 without ever reading an Agatha Christie novel.
Good heavens.
But I now have read one, and I will go on and read a few more. They weren't the best novels I've ever... it wasn't the best novel that I've ever read, but that was the first of the Hercule Poirot. Yeah. I know a lot of the plots because I've seen the movies.
Yeah,
but
right.
It's still worthwhile going back and having a look at the individual... the original source material. As I did with my number five this year, The Big Sleep by Raymond Chandler. Now, I don't know whether people are aware, but one of the major things that came out of the film adaptation of this way back in the 1940s, where Humphrey Bogart played Philip Marlowe, the time-worn, love-lost private investigator that he became well known for. When I think it was William Faulkner who was working on the screenplay, got to the end of it, asked Raymond Chandler, so who killed the chauffeur? And Chandler didn't know. And I went in to have a bit of a look at this, and as I was reading this, I was trying to figure out, and yes, the chauffeur does die, but it doesn't seem plausible that anybody there killed him.
Oh dear.
Which is a bit odd, but Chandler sort of, well, what the hell, nobody's going to notice, but Faulkner did, and I think a lot of other people did as well. Anyway, so my number five is The Big Sleep. My number four, In the Woods by Tana French.
That's very good.
First of her Dublin Murders. That was from, well, the Chandler's from 1939, the French is from 2007. My number three is Exiles by Jane Harper that you just mentioned from 2022. That's the last of her Aaron Falk series of novels, the second of which, Force of Nature, is about to have its film adaptation released. I think it got held up by the actors and screenwriters strike in America at the end of last year, and will be out sometime in the next couple of months. So that will be okay. That follows on from the highly successful film The Dry. So Exiles was number three, 2022. My number two, Devil in a Blue Dress by Walter Mosley from 1990. That's a classic American PI novel that turned it, well, sort of didn't sort of turn the whole category or a whole subgenre on its head. It just opened it up because Walter Mosley had a African-American private eye. And he, Mosley's African-American, and just about all of the characters, all bar two, one major one and one secondary level one and a couple of others, are all African-Americans. And so it's told from a private eye working in an African-American community living in Los Angeles, most of whom have moved there from Texas. Excellent book and certainly worthwhile reading. It's the first of the author's Easy Rawlins novels, and was made into, it was adapted for the screen with Denzel Washington in the lead role. Unfortunately, they didn't do any of the others, which is a bit of a problem, but they could have been very, very good. And my number one, this probably will come as no surprise to you, All the Sinners Bleed by S.A. Cosby. I really do like this guy's work. I think he is getting better and better. I had a look back, and yes, this is the third novel in a row that I've read of his, and each of them is getting just that little bit better each time, and climbing up. It's really good to be able to see this progression from another African-American writer doing such incredibly good work. And if you're worried about crime novels just being about murders and whatever, there's a whole lot in both Devil in a Blue Dress and All the Sinners Bleed about race relations in America as well. You can read them as social novels as much as you can read them as crime novels. Mm. And all the best crime novels are like that. You know, the Henning Menkels, the Ian Rankins, the Michael Connellys, they're all social novels as much as crime novels, sure, all the way through down the line. I've got a couple of honourable mentions. 5 Decembers by James Kestrel, which I spoke about on the podcast at nearing the end of the year. I thought that was an excellent book. And Wake by Shelley Byrne.
Oh, that's very good. Yeah.
She did that win Best First Novel at the Ned Kelly's a couple of years back.
I think
back.
So, yeah. Yeah, it did,
excellent piece of work, and I look forward to her next book, which I believe is out.
Is it? Yes. Oh, good.
I think it's just called Ripper.
Sounds like a ripper.
I think I bought it for the missus for Christmas. She's a bit of a fan of these, so.
Oh, that's good to know. I'll have a keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, do that. Do that indeed. So that's a good one to do. So all in all, a good year of reading
crime. A good
crime
year for crime, yes. I would say so too. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think all every year is a good year for crime.
Crime shoots are pretty good.
It is. I'm glad of it. Okay, so next category, we're both going to deal with spy thrillers.
Yes, this is my insistence that we split these up. So the reason I was split it up was that I read four what I thought were excellent spy thrillers, and they are a bit different from crime, I think. So it's worth separating them, I think. So, and you won't be surprised that three of them are by Mick Herron. So going from the bottom, and again, the order of these in terms of quality is a bit iffy, but I'm going to start with number four on my list as being Dead Lions, which is the second Slough House book, I believe. Then I've got number three being Spook Street, which I think is the fourth. And number two on my list, which I really did think was very good, was Real Tigers, which I think is the third book in the Slough House series. And a friend of the podcast, Kerry Hanfield, tells me he's read 7 or 8 of them so far. We're not quite that far up, but we'll get there. We'll get there.
I think he said he'd read 5 of the 7, I think.
Oh, did he? I thought he said he'd read the 7.
That was a week or so ago. He's probably ploughed through probably the other couple by now
But I'll certainly be looking to read a couple more of those Slimehouse books, and maybe a couple more in the same series as Down Cemetery Road as well this year. So certainly one of each. And number one on my spy thriller list was The Russia House by the master of spy fiction, John le Carré. Okay. That was terrific. I really loved it. And so, yeah, really good stuff. I won't go into detail now about it, but it was a classic classic spy stuff. In the era when Russia was starting to change, we had Gorbachev as the premier, and we hear words like glasnost and perestroika and so on, but nevertheless the spy tensions are still there, and he deals with it very very cleverly. So yeah, and no honorable mentions for that one.
Okay, well yeah, look, I was quite happy enough to split the spy and thriller stuff off after I split them off to see how it looked, but I realized I only read 7 in the in these particular categories, but that's okay. But I've only got 2 on my list because most of the ones I read were a bit sort of, you know, a bit old and tired, uh-huh. You know, 1970 stuff, which was good in the 1970s, but we've got higher expectations now, David. I think that, you know, when you get people like le Carré, and you get Mick Herron, and you get a number of other people that you read, and you think, yeah, it's got to be up a little bit higher to get up into those higher echelons now. You know, you can look at the older novels and sort of say, yes, they're important because without them the current batch could not have appeared, but the current batch are at a higher level. But not always, as we'll say. So my number two, same as your number two, was Real Tigers by Mick Herron from 2016, third in the series. People are probably sick of us banging on about this particular series, but really, it is wonderful, and it's good stuff to read. And I don't know of anybody that I've put them onto that said, oh, no, they're boring, didn't like them. Everybody that has picked them up and read them has said, oh, I'm really glad you gave me, you told me to read these because these are fantastic. And my number one, which I had not read for probably 30, if not almost 40 years, or maybe 40 years, The Day of the Jackal by Frederick Forsyth.
Yes, yes.
Now, this is an ultimate thriller from back in 1971 when it was written, and we all know about the film adaptation with Edward Fox as the British assassin, the Jackal, whose name you never learn, even though you think you've learnt it, even until right at the very end, and you find out that, nah, you didn't know his name after all. It's just a wonderful piece of work, and it's one of those seminal works that showed you what could be done with a sort of speculation. I'm not saying a speculative fiction, but a speculation about how you would go about assassinating a world leader, and in this case, Charles de Gaulle. Of course, it didn't happen, and in the book, it doesn't happen either, as we know. But it's just wonderful to work out how close he got, and whether you know whether that sort of thing could have happened. I read that very late in the year, and that's why it's probably a very good idea, like you, where one of yours was the one of your best in one category was the second last book you read of the year. I read Day of the Jackal in December. So you've got to leave it until right to the very end, I think. And I don't have any honourable mentions either, David, just those. And that's it.
All right. So this is now where we do have a bit of a split. I'm going to talk about one genre and talk about
a
different one. Yep. But my one is historical fiction. And I read 5 books that fit into that category last year. And they're all on my top number 5.
Good.
Which sort of makes sense, I suppose. Okay, so number 5 on my historical fiction list is The Dictionary of Lost Words by Pip Williams, which I thought was it's a clever feminist spin on the origin of the Oxford English Dictionary. And she picks up just one little incident, true incident out of real life, which is one particular word went missing from the Oxford English Dictionary, this massive compilation of supposedly every word in use in the English language, which was being put together in the late 1800s and early 1900s. And there's one word that went missing, which is bondmaid. Pip Williams takes the idea that there's this little child who's the daughter of one of the people compiling the dictionary, And this slip of paper slips off her desk and falls to the floor. And she picks it up. And it's the entry for Bond Maid. And she sort of secretes it away. And it goes on from there. And she builds up her own little list of lost words and words that didn't get in the dictionary, even though they're in common use, because they were seen to be obscene words. And she starts to ask other people, ask people in the market, and she starts to accumulate a number of words which are to do with women, women's bodies, and things that happen to women as opposed to men, and which, of course, were largely being overlooked by these male compilers of the dictionary. So it's a clever, clever story, and it's quite a moving little story. I liked it a lot. I've talked enough about that. Next on my list was number four on my list is Act of Oblivion by Robert Harris, which is all about a couple of people who were involved in the trial and execution of Charles I. And when the restoration happens and Charles II comes in, they flee the country and they go to the United States. Well, it wasn't the United States then. They go to the Americas and flee a pursuit. Great story. Really, really well done. Number three on my list is Shrines of Gaiety by Kate Atkinson, an author I like a lot. Shrines of Gaiety is only historical fiction in the sense that it's set in the early 1920s. It's mainly about the club scene in London and the criminal organised crime bodies that are around those clubs and what happens there. It's good stuff. Number two on my list is Joan by Catherine J. Chen, which is a retelling of the story of Joan of Arc, with her as a very different sort of character from the sort of saintly, delicate sort of creature that legend would have her be. In this book, she's a tough, strong, tall, powerful woman who is driven not by holy spirits anywhere near as much as a desire for revenge against the British and the Burgundians who'd invaded her home village and raped her sister. And number one on my list, which is, again, a book I've only read fairly recently, which is Loot by Tanya James. And it's all about a young boy in India, in the north of India, who gets involved, and this is in the late 1700s and early 1800s, who gets tasked by the Sultan of the place to assist someone to build this mechanical tiger, this automaton, which is of a tiger attacking an English soldier. And it's just this mechanical thing which moves and plays music and does whatever. And but then the British come in and lay siege to the town, and everyone gets killed. The Sultan gets killed, and this young boy manages to escape. And eventually, after a long period of adventures, arrives in France, where he's trying to meet up with the guy he was apprenticed to in India, and try to get him to boost him up in France. Great, great book. It's a very warm story, though there are some terrible incidents happening in it. It's a very warm, engaging sort of story, and nice little romance in it. Nice story, liked it. So that's no honourable mentions, because that was all the historical fiction I read.
Where do you draw the line in terms of whether something is historical or non-historical? I mean,
all fiction in a way is historical fiction, isn't it?
Well, it is.
Except maybe science fiction, I suppose.
Futuristic stuff, but everything told in the past is. Yeah. But would you say that a novel set firmly in the 1960s was an historical novel?
Because that's it is now. And that's
55 years.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it can't be able to be. I mean, if you said a novel around the Vietnam War, that would be historical fiction, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I would have thought so. Yeah. I mean, I don't make that distinction. But anyway, I can understand it. Again, it's one of those genre boundaries that leads us to wonder why we do this, David. But, you know, it's all fun, and you've got to put them into context somewhere.
You've got to put them in some category, yeah.
You do. Anyway, right. Thanks for that. No honourable mentions, as you said?
No honourable mentions.
All right, okay. So my corresponding or almost corresponding extra category here is that of novellas. Now, this, as you'll know, David, is from around about the 25,000 to 40,000 word mark. As I said earlier, Spear by Nicola Griffith is on the edge there somewhere. It's probably only 45, maybe 50,000 words at the outside, 150, 160 pages. And I've seen some novellas, depending on the font size, go out to that level. But anyway, there we go. Just another one of these ones where we have to just make a draw a line somewhere or other. And that seems to be, the word length seems to be the one. Anyway, my number five, The Paper House by Carlos Maria Dominguez. It's just a translated novel about a man who receives a copy of a Joseph Conrad novel that looks like it's been set in concrete at some point. But it wasn't sent to him. It was sent to the person that he's taken over from in a university because she's been run down in a car accident. And he becomes very intrigued about this particular book and just tries to follow it back. And he finds out that it originally belonged to a bibliophile who got to the point where he had no money and could not part himself from his books. So he's made his house out of the books and covered it all in concrete. But when they knocked the house down, they sent one of those back to this particular woman because there was a note about her in the house. So he follows that back, which is... It's very, very amusing, very, very interesting novella. Number four, A Mirror Mended by Alex E. Harrow. This is the second in her series of retold fairy tales. This is, as you can understand, Broken Mirrors. You can figure that one out. It's a sequel to A Spindle Splintered. Splintered from a year or so back. Number three, The Lesson of the Master by Henry James from 1888.
Wow.
One of those ones I read mid-year. I can't remember a single bloody thing about it. Not a thing. Not a thing. No. But I must have enjoyed it. So anyway, here it is. It's number three.
Yeah.
Number two, The Drop by Mick Herron. Mm-hmm. This is one of his novellas the Slough House series.
Yeah, I haven't read any of those yet.
Some of the novellas are good because they fill in the bits in the background. They introduce some characters that are coming in from off screen. And this also goes into a fair bit of stagecraft and spycraft, I should say, in terms of somebody noticing that somebody's made a drop of some documents through somebody else in a cafe and follows it up. Very interesting. Some nice little twists in it in a fairly shortest novel and one that I recommend that you read. But the runaway winner, without any doubt whatsoever, from 1899 is Heart of Darkness by Joseph Conrad.
Oh, yes.
I don't think we need to say anything about this. I gave this one 4.8 out of 5, which is about as high as I get, I think. I don't think I've given anything 4.9 or 5.0, but I've 4.8 is about...
Yeah,
pretty far up there.
Yeah.
I thought that I read 19 novellas in the year. A lot of them were science fiction and fantasy, and most of them I thought were rather bland. Mm. This was a bit of a disappointment because I've always thought that this was a sort of subcategory of science fiction and fantasy where some of the best writing was being carried out, but it just seems to have dropped off last year.
Mm.
Maybe I wasn't finding the right ones to read, David. Mm. Don't know, but for me, yeah. Too many of them seem to be attempting to be completely inoffensive, and I think it basically was to their detriment. You know, they're not trying to do, not trying to offend anybody. They're just trying to be nice. I don't read fiction for people to be nice. I need to have some drama in it. And,
yeah, sure, of course you do.
You know, I can go on what, you know. I want a bit of conflict. I want a bit of drama.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be action, but I want a bit of drama. I want there to be some emotion in it other than, excuse me, I think I'm going to be sick. That's, you know, because things are just too bland and too inoffensive. I want to be offended from time to time, David. That's what I'm here for. You know, and try to offend me. You know, try to, you know. I could be a good hater of novels if I really are given the opportunity. But you can't hate something that doesn't offend you, and you can't love something as well. I mean, I don't, you know, if something is written that panders absolutely and utterly directly to what it is that you think the whole time, well, that's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for something else. I'm looking for something that sort of makes me think about it. And if it just says, yeah, well, I agree with everything that's said there. No. Anyway, so that's me, and no honourable mentions.
Okay, fine. All right, let's roll into the next category, which is, like, not a category, really. It's literary or non-genre or, you know.
Whatever. All the stuff that, all the bucket that we put everything else in. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, now I have some honourable mentions I'll come back to. But I'll start number five on my literary list, which is a book I reread. And Perry will remember this well because we both read it this year, Life After Life by Kate Atkinson. Number five on my list. Number four on my list was Bodies of Light by Jennifer Down, which won the Miles Franklin a couple of years ago, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Terrific book about this woman and her life and the things that terrible things that happened to her, but how she overcomes them. It's good stuff. And number three on my list, again, is a book which was a reread, and that was The Limber Lost by Robbie Arnott, which I reread this year, read it as bedtime reading. Number two on my list was Never Let Me Go by Kazuo Ishiguro. Arguably, you could call it science fiction, but I think of it more as literary. And number one on my list was The Goldfinch by Donna Tartt, which was also the longest book I read during the year, which was 760 pages or something.
Yeah, that's a thump. That's a thump.
Great. It's a great novel. So well written. You know, we've got a coming of age story. We've got a unrequited love story. We've got drugs. We've got sex. We don't have rock and roll, I don't think. We have antique furniture. It's good. And so well written. Beautiful stuff. Beautiful stuff. All right. And my honourable mentions for the year were The Conversation. Sorry, start again. It wasn't that at all. My honourable mentions are The Conversion by Amanda Lowry. She's the lady who wrote The Labyrinth, if you remember, which was very good. Blindness by Jose Saramago. And Her by Gary Disher, which was a novella. So there we go. So that's my literary list.
Okay. Yes, we had always a bit of a problem as to what you're going to call this, literary or non-genre. But I think people will realise it's subject material that doesn't sort of fit into any sort of
standard genre
description, so we just lump it all in together.
Yeah.
My number five, a translated novel from the French, which is A Sunday in Ville d'Avray by Dominique Barberis, a nice, pleasant and interesting book about a woman going to visit her sister on the outskirts of Paris, and the sister suddenly starting to tell her secrets about the family from that day. Interesting stuff. Really enjoyed it. My number four, Fly Away Peter by David Malouf. It's almost a novella, but it's rouse as a novel. Yeah, one of those ones that's right on the border again. I could have put this one in with the novellas, but I'm calling it a novel. Anyway, Malouf's the Australian author, and this is set during the First World War. Follows one particular character from the waterlands around Queensland near the Gold Coast, where he's looking after the swamplands and the wildlife. To him then signing up for the First World War and going over, and instead of coming from a pristine environment, he goes to one where it is hell on earth, basically. So in a very, very interesting, Australian anti-war novel that has appeared for a long period of time on a lot of high school reading lists. So it's really quite interesting. Number three, An Artist of the Floating World by Kazuo Ishiguro. Oh, yes. So it's not Mick Herron, it's Kaz. It's Kaz. We keep on coming back to Mr. Ishiguro.
Very good.
He is very good indeed. This is just a subtle piece of very good writing. Really, really well-controlled, very, very good stuff. His early things, you know, Pale View Hills, this one, An Artist of the Floating World, Remains of the Day, fantastic stuff. I haven't got into his later stuff, as you have, which I'm going to have to do, because he's a bit of a wonder. Nobel Prize winner as well.
Absolutely. There you go.
Number two, The True Story of Spit McPhee by James Aldrich. You could have put this one in with children's literature or whatever you wanted. I look at it as a literary novel because even though it's ostensibly a coming-of-age novel, it's as much about the adults as it is about the young Spit McPhee, set in the 1920s in a fictionalised version of Swan Hill up on the Murray. And it reminded me, not so much because of its location, but just growing up in the country, it reminded me a lot of the things that I grew up with. So that was a healthy reminder. And number one, Cold Comfort Farm by Stella Gibbons 1932. Excellent book. I'd seen a TV adaptation of this, and I thought, well, you know, I'll give it a try. I don't think it's going to be all that great. And it was excellent. Mm-hmm. It was just really excellent. And I was really impressed with it. And I laughed. I laughed a number of times and I thought, well, that's pretty good. Because you don't necessarily laugh when you're reading a literary novel. And it was funny. Even though, you know, you could see what was going on, it just was funny. It was just funny.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
That was good. Honourable mentions for me. What have we got? The Odd Angry Shot by William Nagle, an Australian Vietnam War novel from 1975, and A Passage to India by E.M. Forster from 1924.
Okay.
I read that one because I went to India this year. And, you know, you do these things. And
sure.
I thought it was about time I read this. Yeah, it was okay. I don't think it was as good as a lot of people have touted it to be, but hey, that's just...
The way it goes.
And now we're split again,
David. We're split again, yes.
Another difference.
My category is children's literature, I guess you'd call it. I only read four books that would fit into that category. I'll mention the fourth as an honourable mention when I get there, but yeah, I'll talk about it. So we'll go for number three. So number three was Utterly Dark and the Heart of the Wild by Philip Reeve. And listeners, close listeners will remember that this is the sequel to Utterly Dark and the Face of the Deep by Philip Reeve. And it's a great story about this young character, this young girl living in the, what do they call them? The Western Isles or something. The Isles, if they're a set of fictional islands to the west of England, and it's set in the sort of the Regency period in England, but things are different, obviously, and it's good stuff. Anyway, she ends up having to battle a very primal force at the heart of the wild. It's good stuff. Number two was a reread, A Wizard of Earthsea by Ursula K. Le Guin. Great classic of the genre too. A lot darker than I remembered it. It's a lot scarier than I remembered it. It's not an easy read for a young person, I don't think. And number one on my list, we're thinking about the order, just because it's more recent and a bit more, you know, because I'd previously read A Wizard of Earthsea, I put number one on my list as The Graveyard Book by Neil Gaiman, which is a lot of fun, really. It's really a take on... The Jungle Book, the Mowgli story of a child raised by wolves. In this case, it's a child raised by ghosts in a graveyard. And it's a very funny thing, isn't it?
It is.
It's very clever. Even though there's a terrible murderer out there trying to get the protagonist. There you go. Good stuff.
No, I think it's one of his better books, to be frank, that one. I think everything he did worked well with that.
Yeah. And kind of an honourable mention, but I had issues with it. But it was the fourth children's thing I read this year, which was Impossible Creatures by Catherine Rundell, which was a bit of a disappointment compared to her previous books, which I've liked a lot. So anyway, there we go. I won't talk any more about that.
All right. Well, on my non-children's literature category is collections and anthologies. I generally have a tendency to read a number of single author collections and anthologies, mostly science fiction and fantasy anthologies during the year. Not so much this year because I'm haven't been reading a lot of short science fiction from the 1960s, only the stuff that we've needed for the podcast. So the number of single author collections and anthologies I've read is down. It's down to four, of which I'm only going to mention two.
Okay.
One is New Writings in SF8, edited by John Carnell from 1966. Not much point going into detail about this one, but it's got some good pieces by Colin Capp, John Baxter and Keith Roberts in it. And, in fact, my number one collection of the year is Pavain by Keith Roberts. Now, a number of people will tell you that this is a novel. It may well be a novel. I look on it as being a collection of interconnected stories. So you can take whatever you like.
So.
But it's
in
my collection of short stories, and it is it's quite an interesting... alternate history, set of interconnected stories in alternate history. I think, as I recall, it's Elizabeth I has been assassinated, and Mary, Queen of Scots, takes over and marries the King of Spain, and Catholicism rules in the United Kingdom, or England. Or maybe it is the United Kingdom at that point. I don't know. When did it become the United Kingdom?
Well, she was heir to the throne of Scotland, so yes, it would
so
be.
So it probably would be the United Kingdom. So anyway, excellent work from from 1968. I believe there is an extra story set in that world that isn't in this collection, but haven't tracked it down. No honourable mentions for me. So now we get back to back online again, David, for the rest of this afternoon. And we talk about non-fiction.
We do. And I've read some terrific non-fiction books during the year. I really did. It was probably some great books in that category. So starting from the bottom, well, again, I'll have honourable mentions, but starting from the bottom in number five was The Voyage of the Beagle by Charles Darwin. Great. So he was a great writer, you know. I mean, not just a great scientist, but you read his writing and it's beautiful prose. And it's a really interesting story of this voyage he went on around the coast of South America and then across up to the Galapagos Islands. And his observations are spot on, but he really had a kind of lyrical way of writing about it too, which is great. So I recommend that to you.
I'll get to that. Well, that should also read The Voyage of the Space Beagle as well.
True. The Voyage of the Beagle, by the way, is a production I did for Standard eBooks, so it's available as a nicely formatted free eBook from Standard eBooks.
Good segue.
Indeed. Number four on my list was The Devil and Sherlock Holmes, Tales of Murder, Madness and Obsession by David Gran, who also wrote another book on my list this time around. He's a writer for the New Yorker. Number three on my list, there's a collection of interesting little articles. Number three on my list is Anaximander and the Nature of Science by Carlo Rovelli, terrific science writer, Carlo Rovelli, Italian. And this is about a particular Greek scientist, I suppose you'd say, or a writer who came up with a number of breakthrough concepts which changed the nature of what we know about science. Good stuff. Number two on my list is Red Notice, read the subtitle, Red Notice, A True Story of High Finance, Murder and One Man's Fight for Justice by Bill Browder. It's all about the corruption in Russia under Putin, and the death of Sergei Magnitsky, and Browder's, you know, campaign to get Putin and his cronies to have some justice brought to them because of that. And number one on my list was The Wager, A Tale of Shipwreck, Mutiny and Murder by David Gran again. This is a book-length story of, as it says, shipwreck, mutiny, and murder. It's great stuff. Well, very good. Well worth reading. And that's my non-fiction. Oh, the honourable mentions I have, Unknown Shore, The Lost... Non-fiction seems to have, like, long subtitles. Unknown Shore, The Lost History of England's Arctic Colony by Robert Ruby. That was great. and Alien Oceans, The Search for Life in the Depths of Space by Kevin Peterhand. There you go.
Okay. Well, nonfiction was a category which I did very, very poorly in this year. I only read one, and that's one that I'm actually going to mention now. So I've really got to pull my finger out, and this is the reason why I keep these stats, so that I can go and have a look and go, yeah, I really have to read more nonfiction. I've got a fair amount on the shelves that are there to be read, but I don't seem to pick it up as much. So I've just got to make sure that I'm targeted more in 2024. So my non-fiction one book read this year, Monash's Masterpiece by Peter Fitzsimons. This is about John Monash's major battle, the first one that he was in charge of in the First World War at Le Hamel, that my grandfather happened to be, he was a signaller in that battle and actually was badly wounded, but made it through, otherwise I wouldn't be here. He was my mother's father, and so I was very interested to read this particular book because of that personal connection, but it is a wonderful piece of work. And I thought Peter Fitzsimons, well, you know, he's probably going to be one of these sort of popular historians that isn't going to do a very good job. But this is, it's a well-crafted, well-researched, well-laid-out and engaging and page-turning story. It doesn't keep you very long in one particular piece before he moves on to the next one. And he tells them all as very self-contained vignettes, small stories, so you know you've got finished that one, then you go to the next one, but they're all interconnected. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't say, I'm going to tell you all of everything you need to know about Monash, and 60 or 80 pages later, you think, I'm never going to read this book again. It jumps from one chapter to another and includes all together, but it all comes together very nicely at the end. Very well laid out, very well structured. So I was really quite impressed with the work that he did with this.
Mm.
So now we move on to our best overall books of the year, David, across all the different types of categories.
Yep.
And we have, under your urging, this year going to split those into two sections. Those best overall read for the first time and best overall reread.
Mm.
Luckily enough, I reread enough books last year to be able to do this, but I'm not rereading all that many these days. But anyway... So, do you want to kick us off for your best books read for the year, first time?
I will do that. By the way, this division of the books is down to Bruce Gillespie, who uses that category, that way of splitting things up in his science fiction commentary. But I thought it was a good idea.
Okay, cool.
So, anyway, favourite books. So, my favourite books of the year, which I read for the first time, going from the bottom up again. Number five was Joan by Catherine J. Chen, which I've mentioned, about Joan of Arc. Number four was Loot by Tanya James. So it's interesting. I've got two out of my historical fiction category on the list. So Loot, which was good. Number three was Embassy Town by China Mieville. Number two was Never Let Me Go by Kazuo Ishiguro. That was a great book. Good. So, moving.
Oh, stop it. Just stop.
It's good stuff.
I'll get there.
It makes you cry at the end. And number one on my list, best book of the year, as far as I was concerned, The Goldfinch by Donna Tartt. Terrific, okay. Terrific stuff. Honorable mentions, if I'm still allowed. Mm-hmm. Once Were Wolves by Charlotte McConaughey. Children of Time by Adrian Tchaikovsky. Bodies of Light by Jennifer Down, and let's leave it at this one, The Wager by David Gran. So,
okay, that's a good range. Good range.
Yeah.
Right, mine, books read for the first time this year. Number five, The Mountain in the Sea by Ray Naylor.
Mm.
Number four, All the Sinners Bleed by S.A. Cosby. Number three, Spear by Nicola Griffith.
You really like that. Yeah.
I did really like that one. Yeah. Number two, Cold Comfort Farm by Stella Gibbons. I really like that one as well.
Yeah, obviously.
But my best book for the year, read for the first time, was Sea of Tranquility by Emily St. John Mandel. Yeah. I thought that had a heck of a lot going for it. And I was, as I said, I was very disappointed when it didn't make the ballots. But there we go.
Mm.
Interesting to note that four of those books were published in either 2022 or 23. The only one not was called Comfort Farm by Stella Gibbons.
Hmm.
Interesting. Two SF, one fantasy, one crime, and one literary or non-genre. So there we go. Honourable mentions, Monash's masterpiece, which I just mentioned in the non-fiction, and In the Woods by Tana French.
It is so very
those,
good.
Those are excellent, excellent novels. So, all books right. reread.
Reread, well.
In the, during the year.
Going up from the bottom. Again, I actually have a couple of honourable mentions here. I've read quite a few rereads during the year. So number five on my list was Slaughterhouse-Five by Kurt Vonnegut Jr. Number four on my list was Wizard of Earthsea by Ursula K. Le Guin. Number three was Life After Life by Kate Atkinson. Number two was The Left Hand of Darkness by Ursula K. Le Guin. And number one on my list was Limberlost by Robbie Arnott.
Okay, you really do like Limberlost. That's good.
And I do have two honourable mentions, which were two novels by Dorothy Sayers. The Unpleasantness at the Bologna Club and a collection of short stories, Lord Peter Views the Body.
Oh, right, okay.
That's a reread, yeah.
These are ones you've done for...
Standard eBooks. They're now out. They're falling into the public domain at the beginning of this year, and so they're now available for free. Good. Standard eBooks.
Good idea, and they're very, very well laid out and very well made e-publications.
Indeed they are.
Yes. My number five for books reread. Number five, Slaughterhouse-Five.
There you go.
So we both got that one in, so that obviously made an impression on us after all this time.
Sure.
Number four, The Big Sleep by Raymond Chandler from 1939. Number five, Devil in a Blue Dress by Walter Mosley. Number two, The Grey King by Susan Cooper. As you can see, I just really like those.
Yeah, they're good.
And number one, the biggest, the best of all of the year, even if I put everything in together, it was out on its own, 2 points clear of the next contender, Heart of Darkness by
Joseph
Conrad.
There you go. Wow.
First 4.8.
The horror.
Yes, Mr. Kurtz, he dared. My honourable mentions, The Day of the Jackal by Frederick Forsyth. I really like that. And An Artist of the Floating World by Kazuo Ishiguro.
Yeah, I must get that. Yeah.
Yes. Work your way through. Start at the beginning. I grabbed this one because I couldn't find my copy of A Pale View of Hills. But as Ishiguro said, the first three novels, which ends with Remains of the Day, he said he wrote the same novel three times until he got it right, and then he won the Booker Prize for the third one. So, yeah, he got it right, all right. He did very well. So, I think the one thing that we can say here, David, about our reading is that we try to spread it across as many different genres as we can. I think I read one horror novel all year, which I should read a bit more of. That's not a genre that you ever talk about.
No, I don't like it
terribly much. Depends. I'm not big on all the splatter, but you know the tension and that can be really quite good. So I have to read some more there, and I also have to do something about nonfiction. It's very slack in that regard. And so, you know, you read all of these books and you think, well, I read about the amount I should have read there. And then you add them all up and you put them all together and you think, yes, that 100 books that I was expecting to read, it only gives me an opportunity of reading 6 or 8 nonfiction books through the year to be able to get there. So, you know, there's a lot out there. There's a lot to be read.
Indeed.
And I think that we shall be continuing to do so I've started pretty well in 2024, and I'm hoping for it to be...
Yeah, I've read some good books this year already, yeah.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's going to be a good year. And we shall have to have some of those discussions on our own, David, because as we pointed out last time around, this is going to be the last of our regular podcasts. Well, at least for quite some time. We really feel as though we need an extended break after 100 episodes. Probably close to 150 hours worth of talking, David, over the last 5 years. I mean, it's a hell of a lot. And, you know, the listener's probably sick of our voice. So we'll just have to keep these conversations up over a nice quiet beer on a Friday night.
That sounds good. Which is how it all started, if you remember.
Which was how it all started. And we'll probably have to just go back to that and say, oh, yes, I've been reading this and I've been reading that. But we also both review everything that we read. I put my reviews up on Goodreads and also publish them in a small publication. And I know that you do the same.
Indeed. I have a little story about that, if I may, when you...
Yes, of course you may. You can speak about whatever you like.
Yes, well, I've been on the Substack platform for the last 2 or 3 years, I suppose. Yeah. And been publishing my book reviews there, and then I've been taking some of those and putting them into a fanzine. But I'm leaving the Substack platform. I don't know whether you know, there's been a bit of a controversy lately about Substack enabling very right-wing voices, including actual Nazis, to make money out of the platform. And a number of people, including a number of people I follow, have decided, no, we're not going to stay there if that's happening.
Yep.
And so I'm moving all my reviews, and my future newsletter will live at my own domain, which is biblioscope.org, because the name of the newsletter is Through the Biblioscope. So biblioscope.org, I'll put a note, link in the show notes. And that's where I'll be publishing my reviews from now on.
And people can subscribe.
People can subscribe, and they'll get an email when I produce a new issue.
So it'd be an email as a PDF or...
No.
A straight email newsletter.
A straight email. Well, they get an email to say, come and look at the latest.
Okay.
So it's more like a blog, I suppose, now.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Are we getting back to blogs now? Are we now?
Well, I think there is a bit of a tendency to do that. Yeah. Well, the interesting thing is that I've been really enjoying it because I'm doing it all in pure HTML and CSS. None of this WordPress stuff. None of these other platforms, it's just pure HTML, CSS. Ooh. That's it. End of story. No JavaScript. No, not even any JavaScript.
A little bit of JavaScript's not
bad.
No, you don't need it.
You don't need it.
It's a bit finicky.
Plain.
All right. Okay. Well, that's pretty good, David. Well, I'm glad that that's worked out well.
Well, we'll see. I've only just done it, so we'll see. If I lose all my subscribers, then it didn't work.
it's sort of hard to say goodbye at this point, but we almost basically have to. We're hoping that we'll come back from time to time with some...
maybe at least possible. Do an annual best of.
Well, at least do an annual, maybe do one or two here if we both have read a particular book we want to talk about and... we find something that we want to do. Anyway, we'll do it. And if you're a subscriber, it'll pop up. If not, it won't. But anyway, we'd like to thank everybody for putting up with us for so long. 5 years is a long period of time to be listening to a couple of old geezers muttering on about books and films that they like. And I know that there's a lot of people that have... probably felt that we carry on far too much about older stuff, but I think we've read a decent amount of new material as well, and hopefully we've given people something to go and have a look for, which is really what we're after.
Sure.
But our only thing that I will say to people at the end is keep reading widely. Think of your reading, and I think I've mentioned this before, think of this as being like your food diet. You can't eat pizza every day, and you can't eat in Michelin-starred restaurants every night. You have to basically move around, and every now and again, a really, really good hamburger is a really good thing to look forward to.
Absolutely.
And then sometimes you need to have a long, long, slow meal with a lot of flavour and a lot of depth. And sometimes you need to have a quick snack. And all you want's a sandwich, which has got everything in it. Short, sharp and sweet, done, finished and gone. Read everything. Move across genres, across styles, across lengths. Read in translation. Read more in translation.
Yes, I didn't do a lot well this year.
I'm trying to do a lot more of that as we go. And I can... From my perspective, I can hardly recommend people keeping track of what they read so they can go back and have a look and see whether they feel as though they're sticking to targets or sticking to what they want and set themselves up reading lists. Don't worry about it if you can't get to it. Don't beat yourself up over it. It's purely a matter of having fun. And we're here to enjoy ourselves, be entertained and be informed and educated. And if we can do all of those, I think we've done very well.
Indeed. All right. Very well. We'll hang up our headphones and we'll see you possibly sometime in the future.
Yes, turn off the microphone for the last time and hopefully we'll hear from the listener as to how we went.
Indeed.
All right.
Okay,
thanks, great. David.
See you.
Goodbye.
Thanks, Barry.